Happy morning.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Beginning of another week.
Another sunshiny week. Actually, it's actually very gray out. It's starting to feel like autumn. Praised be. Oh, may the Lord open. Handmaid's Tale stuff.
Blessed be the fruit.
Blessed be the fruit. It's so funny. It's hard to even say, like, praise be. Like, religious terminology, I would use jokingly before sometimes because it's just so overwrought. But now it's just all got that Handmaid's Tale dust on
it. Vibe to it.
Yeah.
It does.
Good morning, CK. Everyone else is CK. Watching. We've got a fun one this week. Apocalypse.
Yeah. Yes. Back to the apocalypse.
Apocalypse Now. Yeah, we're talking about the lingering apocalypse that, you know, I don't know if we're, I can't even tell, are we pre, mid, post-apocalyptic right now? It's all
right. Well, that's sort of the topic. Yeah.
It's a sluggish, lingering apocalypse.
Yeah. I guess we should do our introductions.
Yeah. I'm Ash Van Steenwijk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Julia says it's a perpetual apocalypse, right? And so this is where the topic is coming from. I've been thinking about this more, and as I was saying to Ash before we started, I can kind of feel it. I've been just feeling this in my body. Like this is this weird feeling that I've been having probably all summer. I think that I, at least, and maybe many people, you know, we have this idea that, like, the apocalypse happens, then everything is different, and there's this very kind of clear divide, right? Sort of like the rapture model. You know, the rapture comes, some people get beamed up, everybody else is left in this hellhole on earth kind of thing. But what I've started to feel, and what's this strange sensation that I've been having, is this recognition of, like, oh no, wait a minute. Like, this is, like, we're here. Like, it's sort of already here, but it's almost as if we can't tell. Right? So just as a couple of examples, right? So this morning, as I was thinking about this, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to look up, you know, an article about what's happening in way southern Louisiana after Ida. And, you know, maybe you're aware, that whole area is just completely devastated and wiped out. And so I go look up an article, and I couldn't find a recent one. Like, the most recent article I could find was from September 9th. So it's, you know, over 10 days ago. This is an area that was projected to basically have no electricity for months. Every building was wiped out. It's 100 degrees. I don't know what people are doing there. Like, I mean that literally. Like, I don't know how they're living. I don't know how they're eating or getting water or anything like that. You know, this is basically the climate crisis disaster happening. And yet then you also get on the news and it's like, wow, the Met Gala and the Emmys, and look at all these pretty outfits that people are wearing. And, you know, then you get on social media and you're like, we're going to Europe and having a great time in Croatia, and it's really pretty here. And so I'm realizing that there is this even more than ever bifurcation of what life is starting to be like. And, you know, and it's like, what was that? The show with the different zones. blanking on it now. With donuts and a nice buffet, you know, or you're like eating dead bodies because that's the only food that's available.
It's dark. Yeah, but the it's like Elysium, all these sorts of films that have been, I mean, they're not, I can't even really watch those sorts of things with much fun anymore. It's not like the speculative thing. It's like, oh, that's just this, but space.
Right, right. The only difference is there's a spaceship.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
Well, but even that, right? So we had this, you know, private spaceship blast off and land the other day, right? And these people are getting out and they're all happy. They're like, look, a billionaire took us to space. This is so cool.
Whitey's and going to the moon.
Yeah, Whitey's on the moon.
Yeah. This sums it up. I've seen this. Alan writes, good morning. Have you seen the meme with the Venn diagram apocalypse? And you still have to go to work. But the middle is we're here now. Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Zeleny, I'm hoping I'm saying your name right. As someone said, the Mayans were right. The end of the world happened in 2012. I mean, maybe 1979. I'm just thinking of like things were bad in the 70s. Then we got Reagan, and that's really, I mean, you could point to that. There's all these little moments where you kind of realized, okay, this project. Well, and then you keep going further back, you know. And if you're indigenous, it's like 1492.
Right.
If you are the descendant of enslaved peoples, whenever your family was first taken, like these have all been part of this. To me, empire is apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Because you have to crush human life and uproot people, and that's the nature of like the end of something. And then it does reveal, like, this is the other thing, like when we first started, we're like, look, people's eyes will be open to the truth. and there has been some of that, but the thing, like, we should do a series sometime on fatigue. The idea of being overwhelmed and just too tired to care, because what's happened is people have woken up to the reality that we can't really change things like we thought we might be able to.
Yeah. And so right. On the one hand, the end of the world is sort of always happening. If by the world you just define it as one's particular experience of reality, some way or another, the end of the world is always going on. And these happen in different degrees and different levels and involve different numbers of people. And I think that now, though, one of the differences, and I do think that this is different, unless you maybe go back to when the dinosaurs got wiped out. You know, this is happening on this global scale, right? And so that, you know, other apocalypses were much more localized. And that didn't mean they were any less horrible for the people that were going through them. But it did mean that on the other side of the world, maybe something else completely different was going on. But now, that's not true. Like, whatever is happening in one part of the world really is a mirror and a reflection of what's happening everywhere. And so that's a different level of experience for the human species in terms of this apocalyptic event. And I think that the attempt to put the genie back in the bottle. And I do think that the fatigue thing is part of that. You're like, all right, well, I'm really sick of this, so I'm just not going to wear a mask and go to my favorite bar and pretend that everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's part of the reaction, because there is a sense that when you understand how small we are relative to these systems, you know, and this is something that's happening in our spiritual direction program, where we're we're talking about a lot of these issues, and there's a sense of like, okay, well, how, you know, what do we do, right? How can we fix it? Which is a kind of a natural reaction. But from the spiritual point of view, the sitting with the unfixability is a very powerful and important discipline, but not necessarily a ton of fun, especially at first.
No, no, it's not. James writes, did you have to? I should sing this because I said the word linger. Did you have to? Did you have to? Did you have to let it linger? There we go. That's for you, James. CK writes, this is a self-fulfilling apocalypse. When we have the ability to change things and continue to let the powers that be destroy everything. Kind of, but like, this is the nature of systems. Like, we have to change things, but like the we that it takes to change things is not just like, well, how are we going to all organize together and get there? It's really an uphill battle, but you're right. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's a certain point in which we're getting what many of us wanted. We just didn't, the consequences of our actions were concealed or we were willfully ignorant about them. But this is
that's the other Venn diagram that I was talking to a friend of mine about yesterday, that we're kind of in this Venn diagram of the overlap of idiocy and psychosis. and that's sort of a bad place to be at the intersection of those two.
Yeah. And and it's the big thing, like, and this is what I had someone make fun of me the other day saying, you know, basically making a joke about how all I ever do is post about capitalism, which isn't true. I post about white supremacy and all the other things too. But this is an issue of capitalism. Like, if you're talking about economics in different, like, way, but in the past, if there was, you know, you had Europe, you had different like nations in Africa, and they had their own systems and they were interlocking because they're always interlocking, but colonization and then white supremacy and capitalism that kind of grew up out of that really created this globalizing effect, and this kind of the way trade works in the world is messed up. I mean, it's like grain from North Dakota or whatever, like, dumped into the ocean and then we're getting our other grain from Europe. Like, it's just kind of all kind of like flooping around without any real logic besides what's the most profitable thing. And there's a cost that's not ever factored into the price of things, which is the human and environmental costs. So of course, but by the time it gets to us, it's so abstracted that it's like, well, this Cheerios only costs $3.82. And it went up by a dollar? What the fuck? I don't want to pay an extra dollar for Cheerios. And you can blame the individual for getting upset about Cheerios, but like, really, by that point, it's so abstracted. And there's so many people with so much power that any one person can't just monkey wrench the system. It's just, it's a lot. And we have to deal with the heaviness of that. Anyways, a little sunshine for you this morning. Maybe things all went wrong 80,000 years ago when humans settled down to make beer. No, I think that was one of the best things we ever did.
I think that was what we did to help, to help things out.
I think Dan might say that things started really going wrong probably like 20 years ago, the first time someone put pumpkin spice in beer. Mm-hmm. We were joking about, like, Dan had a lot of stuff to do this morning, and he's like, well, Ash, you go ahead and kind of, here's some ideas, go ahead and pick a theme. And I'm like, episode 233, pumpkin spice. That's what I should have done it.
You had the power. There was a moment there.
James writes, both world wars were likely global apocalypses. For sure. I mean, there's you have these global crashing events where it just reveals the nature of dysfunctional power and systems. We've had a lot of them.
Yeah, well, and I think that's where, you know, when you're talking about capitalism, and if you look at at this last 400 years, which has been this movement towards globalization. Right. So as soon as, you know, you start to get all these, you know, the exploration, all these big ships sailing all over the country, bringing goods, bringing people, you know, doing all that. And now you had this idea that, oh, we can abstract this thing called capital. Right? And so we now have this thing that is totally disconnected from reality, really. Right? It's disconnected from the natural world. It's disconnected from human needs. It's disconnected from, right? But it's this thing that we can increase, and that it makes us then be able to buy stuff and get stuff, right? What that then lets loose is this entire process of the knitting together of all these different societies, purely for the purpose of increasing money, right? There's no other purpose. And so once that starts happening, you know, people joke about the fact that, oh, gee, you know, the whole earth will be destroyed, but there'll still be, you know, money floating around somewhere. Like, is that going to do you any good? Right. And of course it's not. But there is this sense that, you know, and then humans get addicted to this, right? It's this addictive process. You know, check your portfolio, you know, check your bank account, check this, check that. And so, yeah, so that historical movement begins this interlocking process where you can then have the possibility of it all falling apart once it's all connected.
Joyce asks, that's Daniel,
a great question.
What is the goal of sitting with the unfixability, sitting in that fatigue? I feel fatigued, my picture is a lie, and feel a bit hopeless.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, this is a really central aspect of the spiritual life that particularly within, you know, rah-rah positive spirituality, we don't want to talk about, right? So the hashtag blessed, hashtag grateful crowd doesn't really want to talk about this. but, you know, one of the basic realizations and teachings of the spiritual life is that we as human creatures, we as biological creatures, from the moment we're born, start the process of dying, and that we are finite. And that we have actually very, very little power over anything. But the process of both our individual and corporate ego formation is to create the illusion of power, right? And this is what's at the center of white supremacy, for example, right? Where, you know, white people are the best, white people have the most power. You know, God even looks like a white person. And so we want to continually avoid the reality of our own demise. And the spiritual life wants to unwind all of that, right? And say that it is only sitting with the reality of our own finitude that we can actually encounter what is infinite. But that means going through this process of a continual, sitting with our powerlessness. And the paradox is that it's actually in that we discover a lot of power. Because we now discover a power, one, where we're connected to a much more universal power. But two, we actually discover realistic power. Right. So the process of being able to change ourselves, which, again, you know, we want to project out and change the world. And half the time we can't even change our own habits that we don't like. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, the process of true personal transformation that we discover the actual power to do that, right? And that's a real thing. But when we're distracted by all of this fake idea of power in the world, and an obsession with a power that is actually life destroying, we can't get to any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is, you know, part of it's also like the scripts that we have in our society that conceal reality from us also give us kind of prescriptions of what we're supposed to do in order to change things. So once you kind of let go of that, then you start seeing other possibilities you wouldn't otherwise see. And that's really hard because it to most people looks stupid and you think you're being stupid because it's not the script. So, you know,
yeah.
Buy green, shop Democrat, or buy green, vote for a Democrat, recycle, be a witness. Like we kind of like, okay, church, just preach the gospel and try to tell yourself you're compassionate and you're going to give that homeless person a dollar. Like that's our range of options that we know, things that we can do. Those are the things we're told we can do, but that doesn't necessarily transform anything. Mm-hmm. Although it also matters how you do those things too, which is kind of hard. Like, so much of our wiring we take for granted as though this is just how it has to be. We can't even imagine an alternative. And so that's where it gets really sad, that all these thousands, millions of churches in the world, which are supposed to be spiritual centers to help people think, feel, act in ways that are more congruous with the nature of God, that those in fact become like this part of the smoke and mirrors that keep us from perceiving reality at all. This is sad. CK says, I think the possibility of human extinction via pandemics, climate crisis, and consumption, and no viable change in sight is pretty much fucked.
Yeah, I mean,
it's fucked.
You know, in my newest book, talking about spirituality and the climate crisis, I talk about this. I think that for the first time, probably, it is truly dawning on human beings that we could go extinct. Right now, on the one hand, you see, and this is what's interesting about this exact kind of state of delusion that I was just referring to. I mean, on the one hand, this should be obvious to us. Right. I mean, we're animals, right? We're mammals. We're biological creatures. There have been millions of biological creatures throughout evolution that have gone extinct. It happens, right? Climate changes. Some other creature comes along that eats all of you. You know, whatever happens, and so it should occur to us that we could also go extinct someday. And then the earth would just be populated by all kinds of other things.
Like mammoths now.
Well, right. They're woolly mammoths or, you know, cockroaches or whatever. But in fact, I'd be willing to bet that for most of human history, humans really have not thought about that. And I think now for the very first time, at least at a very widespread level, and maybe I'm sure individuals have thought about this before, but on a very widespread level, people are realizing like, we could go extinct. And that doesn't feel good. And so, but I think that this is actually a very helpful thing for us to begin to recognize, because maybe if we really got that, we would start to say, so systems of care and connecting to the earth and doing things that are life-giving, maybe that would be a good thing, because then we might not go extinct as quickly.
CK writes, this shit is stressful and crazy, antithetical to life, but finding some peace and love is the amazing truth of humanity. I mean, that's the thing. It's not like... Mm-hmm. So I get a little grumpy when people want to be all Malthusian and say, well, humanity's shit. It's like, as in some totality, like, it's like, no, we can, some of us are shittier than others. Let's just be honest about who the where the burden of shittiness comes from. And it's not all shit all the way down. There's beautiful things about different cultures, different people. We don't all have to be Darth Vader. Jeff Bezos is Darth Vader. or whatever. He's kind of a sad, weak.
Although at a costume party, a lot of people want to be Darth Vader.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty badass costume. Joyce writes, oh, yes, I can see that. Thanks.
Welcome.
Zeleny writes, theologically, preterism is interesting. It says, that's the view of the book of Revelation. It says that end times Jesus talked about happened in 70 AD when Rome sacked Jerusalem and destroyed the temple. Because that was the end of the world from a certain perspective.
Right. That was another end of the world kind of event.
And there's been a bunch of these. that's how we consider the end of the ancient time in the beginning of the Middle Ages is the fall of Rome. That was an end of the world situation. 1066, when William the Conqueror invaded England, was an apocalyptic moment. 1492, a lot of these, because we need an end like that, but in a different direction. Like these ends are usually imperial forces coming and uprooting and colonizing a people. We need a reverse apocalypse.
Which
is what the book of Revelation is trying to say. This is it's going to all come back to where now there's the city of God. It's a reversal of the empire. And that's the apocalypse that we need. We need it. CK writes, so can we be on the brink of a mental, physical, spiritual turning point? I hope so.
Well, so we CK, know. I mean, that, you know, what all spiritual traditions talk about is that that's actually always a possibility,
mm-hmm.
right? That's always a possibility that we're offered. I mean, all these little statements that Jesus makes about, you know, look, the kingdom of God just passed by. You know, look, the kingdom of God is within you. Look, the kingdom of God is just right there, right? That there is always the possibility of waking up. And that is something that we're you know, called to in every moment. And it does seem that as human beings, we often need more extreme situations to take that teaching seriously. I was thinking about this when I saw these, you guys have probably all seen these incredible pictures of these thousands of Haitians, you know, streaming, you know, somehow they got to Mexico, right? They took boats or planes or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they somehow got to Mexico. They walked across or drove across or whatever, Mexico. They got to the Texas border, and there's thousands of people just living there now, right? And, you know, and now the solution is, oh, well, let's round them all up and fly them back to Haiti, where the society, again, is basically destroyed and half the island is non-functional, even more than it was before the earthquake. And, you know, I was thinking about this. I'm like, what is it going to take for us to wake up and go, okay, maybe, you know, and then meanwhile, in the exact same time frame, the U.S. is cutting this deal with Australia for an even bigger nuclear submarine to scare China out of the South China Sea, right? It's like, maybe we could take some of those trillions of dollars and just say, you know, we just need all to figure out how to live together. I mean, we can't even figure out how to house all these people in every city that you're living in America, right? I mean, we've got this monstrous tent city about 10 blocks from where Ash and I live, you know, up on Cedar and Franklin. And it's like, at what point are we going to go, you know, like assuring that those people have food and water and shelter is probably a better bang for our buck than building another fucking nuclear submarine. Like, you know, yeah, what's it going to take to have this physical, mental, spiritual turning point? I mean, that's often the question.
Well, and to, you know, getting to this idea of unveiling, all of this, there are a shit ton of myths, but one of the dominant ones in our society that permeates and animates everything is this myth of private property. And I bring that up because there's this idea that somehow the homeowners who own things and who get paid by someone who owns a business, that there's a moral uprightness to that, that is so powerful that if someone doesn't own something, they live in a tent, that they are seen as trash people who do not have the same rights by virtue of their lack of ownership of things. And that the idea of what it would take for us to say, let us now treat them like family, would mean we'd have to let go of the myth of that, of my ownership of something. Because like you said, that's what happens when you start talking about taxes. It's like, why should I have to give the government my money to do their shitty things? That homeless person made their own choices. This, that is the thing that we need an apocalypse from. That has to break. I mean, Soviet Union had their apocalypse. You know, we can talk about how good it worked out, but that the Soviet Union emerging was at least an attempt at a reverse apocalypse in the sense of undoing sort of like this dominating system. Now it kind of got replaced. Sorry, tankies, but it got replaced with a different kind of dominating system. But they were trying to confront some of that idea. Mm-hmm. We need something like that. It's a revolution, we could call it, but like it. We need to see the world through a different lens than private property ownership and capitalism. Julia writes, if you look at it in the view of a bunch of comments coming in here, we're going to blaze through them because we're past time. Julia writes, if you look at it in the view of things come together, things fall apart, then yes, absolutely. Or so I believe that a spiritual turning point is coming. Is that? I think so. That's what she's referring to. Julia also writes, Haitians come on foot through the DR, across South America, through Central America to park on the border. Many have been traveling for months. It's a complete shit show.
Yeah.
David writes, the beginning of the pandemic felt like that potential moment for a larger spiritual awakening. Then we witnessed the doubling down on the dumb. We are in really deep in the desire not to see. Tracy appreciates the doubling down on dumb statement.
There's a slogan right there. Triple D, doubling down on dumb.
Diners, drive-ins and dives, doubling down on dumb.
Yeah.
William writes, they also resist giving up private property because they've been poisoned against anything that sounds like communism. Yes, for sure.
And that's the other than mythology. No, and it's amazing the stuff that gets wrapped up in that. Like I was just like this whole thing about this issue of free college, right? And how now free college has been wrapped into the socialist communist world. Mm-hmm. And I finally wrote something about this with somebody posted something about this the other day. I'm like, you know, what's so bizarre is that my generation and my parents' generation all had access to free college. Like that was normal.
Yep.
That actually used to be normal. I mean, my parents went to college for free at the City College of New York, which was a great university. I went to college basically for free at the University of California, one of the greatest universities in the world. Like that used to be the way college was. But then again, all these money market folks are like, oh, this is a new way to make money. Let's create student loans. And these student loans, if you're not aware of them, we could do a whole week on student loans. I mean, this is one of the most predatory loan shark situations that I've ever heard of, right? You have people that have already paid back like double what they borrowed and they owe more than what they started.
Yeah.
Right? Which is some pretty fucked up math. Right there.
It sure is. And
so when we're talking about canceling student loans, we're not even talking about people not getting paid back, right? Many of these institutions have been paid back multiple times. So anyway, you can see that I could really go off on this. I'm really pissed about this.
Yeah, me too. CK writes, it's crazy that things have to be apocalyptic to bring about our ability to change. So what does that say about our evolution?
Yeah. Well, good question. I mean, one of the things that it says about evolution is that, and this gets back to the systemic piece, evolution is not nearly as flexible as we sometimes talk about it as. And creatures get stuck all the time in what is actually called an evolutionary dead end. And then they go extinct. And so, right. So one of the questions is, has consciousness given us something that is going to allow us out of the evolutionary dead end? Or are we not much better than algae? Although algae will probably survive longer.
We're just algae that knows that we're fucked. That's what consciousness is. Now, James writes, Sarah from Navient has me on speed dial.
I assume that's in reference to student loans.
Yeah. Tracy writes, yes, I have friends who are delaying their retirement because they are trying to help their children pay off the loans. Multi-generational impact. I'm just hoping that my plan is to just die with my student loans and hope it doesn't pass. Hope we never change the laws to pass it on, like some sort of Dickensian nightmare where Jonas has to go to debtor's prison to pay off my debt.
So, all right. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah. Just a ray of sunshine blasted up our butts. That's what this. Yay, apocalypse, student loans.
All right. So thanks for joining us to double down on dumb.
Yeah. That could be our new, we should steal that and make our show called Doubling Down on Dumb.
There we go. I'm sensing a new t-shirt to go with Andy.
Yeah. David can get all the proceeds. We can just start selling that.
All $5. All right. We'll see you on Wednesday.
See you.